Welcome to Zichu Daf Siman, member by Abraham Goldhari, and here Maseches Ksubas, Daf Pei Ches, the ninth parak, Hakosav Ishto. The Zichu Maseches Ksubas program has been generously sponsored as a schus for Hakazachas Torah. So the three topics we're going to focus on. Number one, Rav Papa said, Ipikeachu Maiselel Lidei Shvuah Deraisa. If a husband is clever, he can bring his former wife to be chayv with a Shvuah Deraisa. Rashi explains that the Shvuah Deraisa is more chamor than a Drabanan one, since the person must swear in Hashem's name and hold a Sefer Torah. With a Drabanan Shvuah, one only accepts a curse upon himself if he lies. The husband gives her the Ksuba payment in the presence of one aid, and then he combines the first aid with a later aid. Rashi explains that he brings them both to basin so that if she denies having received payment, there'll be two aidim against her, and then he establishes the first monies as a loan, which she must repay. If she denies the former payment was made, the first aid will testify that she was paid, which will obligate her to make a Shvuah Deraisa. Rav Shisha Bar Rav Idi objected to this, asking how can the husband combine the two aidim who didn't see the same thing? The Gemara concludes that the plan should be where the husband gives the ksuba payment a second time in the presence of the first and latter witness, and then establish the first monies as a loan. Rav Ashi clarifies, v'hud modeluhu, its effect where the man informs the two aidim of his plan before making the second payment. This way, the woman will not be able to claim there were two ksuba payments. Pointing to the Mishnah say that if a woman comes to collect her ksuba not in the presence of her husband, she may not collect except with an oath that she was not paid. Rav Elchai Zohar Bira said there was an incident like this that came before Rabbi Yitzchak in Antiochia, and he stated, they taught that collection is allowed in the debtor's absence only regarding a woman's ksuba mishum chena, because of favor, which Rashi explained earlier, is so that men will find favor in the eyes of a woman who will marry them and not fear that they'll be able to collect their ksubas. But an ordinary Baal Chov may not collect from the debtor's property in his absence. But Rava said, in the name of Rav Nachman, the Mishnah's ruling does apply as well to an ordinary Baal Chov, so that everyone will not take his friend's money and go live overseas, and you'll close the door in the face of borrowers, because lenders would be discouraged from lending. And pointing with me, in the Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon said, whenever she claims her ksuba, the heirs may impose a shvuah on her. But if she does not claim her ksuba, the heirs may not impose a shvuah on her. The Gemara asks what case Rabbi Shimon was referring to, and after numerous explanations are rejected, the Gemara concludes that the first part of Rabbi Shimon's statement means that even in a case where the husband exempted her from an oath when collecting from the Yosomim, she must still take an oath when she's collecting her ksuba. Rav Papa teaches Rabbi Shimon's latter statement is coming to teach that he argues against the Tanakhama and Rabbi Eliezer in the earlier Mishnah and holds that a wife is never subject to the Shvuas Apotropos, the administrator's oath, even if the husband appointed her and did not exempt her from oaths. So once again, the three points are number one. Rav Papa said, Ipikeachu Maiselel Lidei Shvuah Deraisa. If a husband is clever, he can bring his former wife to be chayv with a Shvuah Deraisa. Rashi explains that the Shvuah Deraisa is more chamor than a Drabanan one, since the person must swear in Hashem's name and hold a Sefer Torah. With a Drabanan Shvuah, one only accepts a curse upon himself if he lies. The husband gives her the ksuba payment in the presence of one aid, and then he combines the first aid with a later aid. Rashi explains that he brings them both to basin, so that if she denies having received payment, there'll be two aidim against her, and then he establishes the first monies as a loan, which she must repay. If she denies the former payment was made, the first aid will testify that she was paid, which will obligate her to make a Shvuah Deraisa. Rav Shisha Bar Rav Idi objected to this, asking how can the husband combine the two aidim who didn't see the same thing? The Gemara concludes that the plan should be where the husband gives the ksuba payment a second time in the presence of the first and latter witness, and then establish the first monies as a loan. Rav Ashi clarifies, v'hud modeluhu, its effect where the man informs the two aidim of his plan before making the second payment. This way, the woman will not be able to claim there were two ksuba payments. Pointing to the Mishnah say that if a woman comes to collect her ksuba not in the presence of her husband, she may not collect except with an oath that she was not paid. Rav Elchai Zohar Bira said there was an incident like this that came before Rabbi Yitzchak in Antiochia, and he stated, they taught that collection is allowed in the debtor's absence only regarding a woman's ksuba mishum chena, because of favor, which Rashi explained earlier, is so that men will find favor in the eyes of a woman who will marry them and not fear that they'll be able to collect their ksubas. But an ordinary Baal Chov may not collect from the debtor's property in his absence. But Rav said, in the name of Rav Nachman, the Mishnah's ruling does apply as well to an ordinary Baal Chov, so that everyone will not take his friend's money and go live overseas, and you'll close the door in the face of borrowers, because lenders would be discouraged from lending. And pointing with me, in the Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon said, whenever she claims her ksuba, the heirs may impose a shvuah on her. But if she does not claim her ksuba, the heirs may not impose a shvua on her. The Gemara asks what case Rabbi Shimon was referring to, and after numerous explanations are rejected, the Gemara concludes that the first part of Rabbi Shimon's statement means that even in a case where the husband exempted her from an oath when collecting from the Yosomim, she must still take an oath when she's collecting her ksuba. Rapapa teaches Rabbi Shimon's latter statement is coming to teach that he argues against the Tanakhama and Rabbi Eliezer in the earlier Mishnah and holds that a wife is never subject to the Shvuas Apotropos, the administrator's oath, even if the husband appointed her and did not exempt her from oaths. All right, so now we go to our Siman Daf Peches, and our standard Siman is a garbage can or a dustbin, depending on where you live in the world. So garbage can is our Siman. So here goes. The clever husband's plans to organize two Eidim to make his wife make a Shvuah D'oraisa ended up in the garbage can when both his wife and Baal Chob each took a Shvuah while he was away b'minyan Yisayam. And his wife proudly proclaimed that she's never, ever subject to a Shvuas Apotropos. Once again, in slow motion. The clever husband's plans to organize two Eidim to make his wife make a Shvuah D'oraisa ended up in the garbage can, which reminds us, Rapapa said, if a husband is clever, he can bring his former wife to be Chayev with a Shvuah D'oraisa. The Gemara concludes that the plan should be where the husband gives the ksuba payment in front of one aid, then gives it a second time with the first aid there and a new aid, and then establish the first monies as a loan. Ravashi clarifies it's effective where the man informs the two Eidim of his plan before making the second payment. This way, the woman will not be able to claim there were two ksuba payments. So the clever husband's plans to organize two Eidim to make his wife make a Shvuah D'oraisa ended up in the garbage can when both his wife and Baal Chob each took a Shvuah while he was away but meeting a Sayyam, which reminds us, the Mishnah states that if a wife comes to collect her ksuba not in the presence of her husband, she may not collect except with an oath that she wasn't paid. Rava said in the name of Rav Nachman that the Mishnah's ruling does apply as well to an ordinary Baal Chov, so that everyone will not take his friend's money and go live overseas. You'll close the door in the face of borrowers because lenders would be discouraged from lending. So the clever husband's plan to organize two Eidim to make his wife make a Shvuah D'oraisa ended up in the garbage can when both his wife and the Baal Chob each took a Shvuah while he was away b'minyan Sayyam. And his wife proudly proclaimed that she's never ever subject to a Shvuas Apotropos. Which reminds us, in the Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon said that whenever she claims her ksuba, the Yorshi may impose a Shvuah on her, but if she doesn't claim her ksuba, the Yorshi may not impose a Shvuah on her. The Gemara asks what case Rabbi Shimon was referring to, and our puppet teaches that Rabbi Shimon's latter statement is coming to teach that he argues against the Tanakhama and Rabbi Eliezer in the earlier Mishnah, and holds that a wife is never subject to a Shvuas Apotropos, even if the husband appointed her and did not exempt her from oaths. So once again, the clever husband's plans to organize two Eidim to make his wife make a Shvuah D'oraisa ended up in the garbage can when both his wife and Baal Chob each took a Shvuah while he was away b'minyan Yisayam. And his wife proudly proclaimed that she is never, ever subject to a Shvuas Apotropos. All right, now it's time for four blot back Chazara. Daf Pei Dalet. So the Siman Daf Pei Dalet is a launch pad. So here goes. The astronaut who kept the deposit and loan given to him in his rocket ship on his launch pad. That must be more Daf Pei Dalet. The astronaut who kept the deposit and loan given to him in his rocket ship on his launch pad was surrounded by his deceased creditor's wife, Baal Chob and Yorshin, which reminds us, the next Mishnah states, Misha meis v'niach isha u'Baal Chob v'Yorshin. If someone died and left a wife, a creditor, and heirs, all making claims on his estate, and he had a deposit and a loan in the possession of others, Rabbi Tarfon says, Yinasin lo koshel shebehen, they shall be given to the weakest among them. Rabbi Kiva says, E merachmin b'din, we're not merciful in deciding the halacha, rather the property should be given to the Yorshin, for all them referring to the widow and the Baal Chob require an oath before they can collect, whereas the Yorshin do not require an oath. The Gemara explains why the Mishnah mentioned both cases of a deposit and a loan. So the astronaut who kept the deposit and loan given to him in his rocket ship on his launch pad was surrounded by his deceased creditor's wife, Baal Chob and Yorshin, who were fighting over who was the weakest to collect, which reminds us, the Gemara asks what Rabbi Tarfon means that the property is given l'koshel shebehen, to the weakest among them. Rabbi Yosef Bar China said l'koshel shebaraya, it's given to the one with the weakest proof, which is the one who has the most recently dated shtar, since he cannot collect from properties that were sold before the date of the shtar. And Rabbi Yochanan said l'ksuba's isha mishum china, it's designated to the woman's ksuba because of favor. Rashi explains that she's considered weaker because it's not a woman's way to investigate what were the holdings of the deceased and find land from which to collect. So the astronaut who kept the deposit and loan given to him in his rocket ship on his launch pad was surrounded by his deceased creditor's wife, Baal Chob and Yorshin, who were fighting over who was the weakest to collect, when suddenly the wife snatched some detached fruit to cover the value of her ksuba and gave the surplus to the Balchov. Which reminds us, the Mishnah taught that if the deceased left detached produce from the ground, whoever is first to seize it gains possession of it. If they gain more than what was owed to him, most of the surplus is given, according to Rabbi Tarfon, to the weakest among them, whereas Rabbi Kiva says it's given to the Yorshin since they do not require an oath to collect. The Gemara says, according to Rabbi Kiva, seizing is effective when the creditor sees the property during the father's lifetime. Daf Pei Hei. So the Simmer Daf Pei Hei is a dentist. So here goes. Tovia, the wealthy dentist. Dentist? That must be more in Daf Pei Hei, mouth. Tovia, the wealthy dentist, who refused to give the shtar to the patient Shaliach, who paid for cleaning, claiming he still owed money for a filling. Which reminds, the Gemara brings a case where the Shaliach pays the debt on behalf of a debtor, but is not given the shtar, as the creditor says that there was another debt owed that was a milva al peh, and they're keeping the monies for that debt. The Gemara clarifies that if there are no aiding, the creditors are believed based on amigo, and the shliach must pay the debtor because he worsened the situation. So, Tovia, the wealthy dentist, who refused to give the shtar to the Beishan shliach, who paid for a cleaning, claiming he still owed money for a filling, was about to leave the office to pick up a silver cup he had deposited by another patient who just died, which reminds us, there was a certain person who deposited a silver cup with Chasa, and then Chasa died without leaving any final instructions regarding the property in his possession. The depositor and Chasa's heirs came before Rav Nachman, for the heirs claimed that the cup might have belonged to their father. Rav Nachman said to them, Yadana beba Chasa del Amid. Firstly, I know that Chasa was not wealthy enough to have owned a silver cup, and furthermore, the claimant gave a simon, which proves that the cup is his. So, Tovia, the wealthy dentist, who refused to give the shtar to the patient Shaliach, who paid for a cleaning, claiming he still owed money for a filling, was about to leave the office to pick up a silver cup he had deposited by another patient who just died, when he just heard the news that another patient just bequeathed all of his property to a Tovia. Which reminds, the Gemara discusses a case where a certain man said before his death, Nechsaila Tovia, my properties are hereby bequeathed to Tovia, but he didn't indicate which Tovia he meant. Daf Pei Vav. So the Simmer Daf Pei Vav is police. So here goes. The debt police, police. That must mean we're on Daf Pei Vav. The debt police who were trying to calm down an irate purchaser of a loan that the lender subsequently forgave, which reminds us, Shmuel said, if a creditor sells a loan document to another and afterwards he forgives the debt is forgiven and the buyer of the shtar can no longer collect it. Moreover, after the seller's death, even his heir can forgive the debt. Rav Huna Bar Yehuda Yeshua said that if the purchaser of the debt is a pikeach, if he's clever, he should offer the borrower some money before the seller forgives the loan and have the borrower write a new shtar in his own name. Rashi explains that this prevents the lender and debtor from depriving the purchaser of the loan by forgiving it, since he has a direct claim now against the debtor. So, the debt police who were trying to calm down an irate purchaser of a loan that the lender subsequently forgave, telling him that paying back a loan is merely a mitzvah, which reminds Rav Kapuna said to Rav Papa, according to your opinion, that prius balchov mitzvah, that paying a creditor is merely a mitzvah, what is the law if the debtor says he does not want to do the mitzvah? Rav Papa holds that midaraisa, a debtor's properties are not automatically mortgaged to his creditor. Rather, as Rashi explains, the debtor is obligated to pay his creditor only because the Torah obligates him to keep his word. Rav Papa brought a brice regarding giving malchus to teach that we force the debtor to fulfill the mitzvah to repay the loan, meaning that we coerce him by confiscating the amount he owes. So the debt police were trying to calm down an irate purchaser of a loan that the lender subsequently forgave, telling him that paying back a loan is merely a mitzvah, rushed over to deal with the domestic dispute where a wife is calling her husband a snake for making her take a shvuah lechadchila on her spindle and dough, which reminds us. The next Mishnah states, Hamoshiv es ishto chenvanis o shemina apitropia. If one sets up his wife as a storekeeper or he appointed her as an administrator of his business, harizem eshpia kozman shiyirtza, he may impose an oath on her whenever he wants. Rabbi Yezu says, apil al pilkav al isasa. Even concerning her spindle or her dough, he may impose an oath. The Gemara asks, if Rabbi Yezu said he may impose an oath regarding her spindle or dough as a gilgal shvua, an oath that's rolled onto another oath but cannot be made independently, or even a chedchila, that a person can make such an oath. The Gemara brings a brisa to prove that Rabbi Eliezer holds that the oath can be made with chedchila. Daf Pei Zayin. So the Simmer Daf Pei Zayin is a golden Pez candy dispenser. So here goes. When the CEO of the Golden Pez Candy Company, Golden Pez Candy Company? That must be on Daf Pei Zayin. When the CEO of the Golden Pez Candy Company got engaged for the third time, his new bride insisted that he write a shtar that he has no vow or oath upon her. Which reminds us, the mission on the bottom of Daf Pei Vav Amud Av stated, Kasava neder ushvua inli alaych. If a husband wrote a shtar to his wife stating, I have neither a vow or oath upon you, he may not impose an oath upon her, but he may impose an oath upon her heirs and her successors, which Rashi explains refers to those who purchased a ksuba before she got divorced or died. The Gemara asks, which oath does the husband's waiver exempt her from? If you'd have said in the name of Rav, Apotropia Shenasa B'chai Bala, it applies to the oath over an administrative position that she takes during her husband's lifetime. And Rav Nachman said in the name of Rabba Bar Avohu, Apogemus Ksuba Sa, the waiver applies even to the oath where she impairs her Ksuba. So when the CEO of the Golden Pez Company got engaged for the third time, his new bride insisted that he registered that he has no vow or oath upon her, because he made his second wife make it the Rabbanan Shvua, that she only collected half of her Pez candies due on her ksuba, which reminds us, the next Mishnah states, HaPogemus Ksuba Sag Lo Tiparai El B'Shvua. If a woman impairs her ksuba by admitting that part of it was already paid, she may only collect the remainder with an oath that has not been paid in full. Rami Bar Chama thought to say that this is a deraisa shvua of moda b'mikzvahs, but Rav explained the oath was enacted as the rabban because the paradaik, the mifrlo daik, the one who pays a debt is attentive to the details of his payment, whereas the one being paid is not as attentive. The rabban therefore imposed an oath upon the woman in order that when she paid, she should be attentive. Knowing that she'll have to swear when she comes to collect the remainder, she'll pay attention at the time of the initial payment. So when the CEO of the Golden Pez Company got engaged for the third time, his new bride insisted that he write a shtar that he has no vow or oath upon her, because he made his second wife make it the Rabbanan Shvua, that she only collected half of her Pez candies due on her ksuba, and made his first wife make it the Rabbanan Shvua when he brought a single witness to testify that her ksuba was paid. Which reminds us, the Mishnah says that if one A testifies against her that the ksuba was paid, she may only collect with the shvua that it was not paid. Rav explains that this is a Rabbanan Shvua, kidei hapis daitu shabal, in order to put the husband's mind at ease, since his claim is supported by a single aide whose testimony requires one to take an oath in other cases, the Rabbanan ordered to swear before collecting. All right, so now it's time to conclude with a pop quiz of 10 questions. Number 1. Which step do you discuss the implications when a husband writes a shtar to his wife that says, Neder or shvua ain't we alike? I have no neder or shvua on you. That's on Dav. Pei Zayin. Good. Number 2. Which step do you know that Rabbi Shimon holds that a wife is never chayav to take a shvuas apitropos? That's on Dav. Peches. Good. Number 3. Which step do you know why the Mishnah listed both a deposit and a loan in the hands of another that are being contested by a wife, a Baal Chov and Yorshin? That's on Dav. Pei Dod. Good. Number 4. Which step do you learn how a clever husband can organize Edim so his wife makes a shvuah deraisa? That's on Dav. Peches. Good. Number 5. Which step do you learn that when a wife is pogemus her ksuba, she makes a shvuah derabanan? That's on Dav. Pei Zayin. Good. Number 6. Which step do you learn what is done if a debtor does not want to pay, according to Rav Papa, who holds prius bal chov mitzvah? That's on Dav. Pei Vav. Good. Number 7. Which of the when both a wife and Baal Chov take a shvua to collect when the husband or debtor are not present? That's on Dav. Pei Ches. Good. Number 8. Which of the when one A testifies that the wife was paid her ksuba, she makes a shvua derabanan? That's on Dav. Pei Zayin. Good. Number 9. Which of the when one sets up his wife as a storekeeper or he appointed her as an administrator of his business, Rabbi Yehuda says he composed an oath even on her spindle or dough? That's on Dav. Pei Vav. Good. And number 10. Which step through the case where a silver cup was deposited in Chasa's house and the Yorshin attempted to claim it was their father's? That's on Dav. Pei Hei. Excellent. All right, that concludes today's shir. That's Rabbi Avram Goldman Zichu wishing you a great day and great learning. In the earlier Mishnah, it holds that a wife is never subject to the Shuas Apitropos, the administrator's oath, even if the husband appointed her and did not exempt her from her oaths. In the earlier Mishnah, it holds that a wife is never subject to the Shuas Apitropos,